Namaste, it's Sahara Rose, and welcome back to the Highest Self Podcast, a place where we discuss what makes you your soul's highest evolvement. Last week's episode has caused a mini spiritual revolution, and I couldn't be more excited about it. So many of you are sharing episode 50, all about how we are waking up a transmission from the cosmos. You are feeling motivated to fulfill your dharma and share your message with this planet, and are more awake of what's going on from a larger global perspective. And I'm so just honored to be a conduit of this message for you. So if you haven't listened to that episode, be sure to check it out, episode 50. This week's episode, we're going to go deep into Ayurvedic wisdom. A lot of you are asking me questions about Ayurveda, and this is the guide to learn it from. So I'm really excited to share this week's episode with you. But first, a little bit about health. Our podcast this week is brought to you by Four Sigmatic. If you haven't heard that episode, I interviewed the founder, Taro. He is the founder of Four Sigmatic, a mushroom elixir company that takes medicinal mushrooms and makes them easy to consume, super tasty, and little on-the-go packets. I'm obsessed with the reishi. It's been so good for healing my adrenal fatigue. It's really earthy and grounding. They have all sorts of different types of elixirs, from lion's mane to chaga to cordyceps. And if you don't know what these mean, just listen to the episode 48, where we discuss all about the medicinal mushrooms. And I've seen Four Sigmatic popping up all over, and I'm just excited that the world is opening up to using more natural foods and plants to give us the sensations, whether we want to be more active or chill or whatever it is. Instead of turning to drugs and alcohol, we're just using mushrooms. What could be better? So if you want to give it a try, go on foursigmatic.com/Sahara. It's spelled foursigmatic.com/Sahara, S-A-H-A-R-A, and you'll get 15% off your order. I'm obsessed with the reishi. I love the chaga. It has really good rose hip and peppermint in it. A lot of people love the coffee. If you're a coffee drinker, it's an amazing alternative. They have so many different kinds of flavors, and it's such a thing that's worth getting, especially with the 15% off. It comes to actually less than it would cost you to go to a coffee shop every single day, and you're getting so many more benefits from it. So check it out. And now I'm so excited to share this week's guest. Dr. Suhas Kshirsagar is a classically trained Ayurvedic physician, and he graduated from the prestigious Pune University. I found out about him because Deepak wrote the foreword of his books. They actually work together closely, and he's worked with His Holiness Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who is the founder of Transcendental Meditation. He's shared the stage with Tony Robbins and Wayne Dyer and so many others in the field, and he's really one of the most educated Ayurvedic physicians of our time. He's also a medical Vedic astrologer, so from your chart he can tell what's going on with your health. He was the chairman of the Maharishi College of Vedic Medicine. He really is so accomplished, so knowledgeable, and his new book just came out, Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life, which is such a must read for all of you guys who are interested in Ayurveda, because he shows with actual clinical research how if we optimize our days with our schedules, we're going to be so much healthier. So he shows how clinically it's proven that we're supposed to eat meals at certain times, and why Ayurveda has this 24-hour time of day that I talk about in my book, and he is truly an expert in. So I really recommend checking out his book. It just came out on January 30th, Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life. And in this episode, we talk about all sorts of Ayurvedic things. It's a really, really great introduction for people. We talk about the concept of digestion from an Ayurvedic perspective, the Agni, the digestive fire. His previous book was called Hot Belly Diet, so he knows a lot about that, the hot belly, the Agni. Why our schedules are just as important as what we eat, the cause of autoimmune issues, why food is sometimes overrated and it's actually only 1/5 of the energy that we take in from an Ayurvedic perspective, and how what we hear and see and smell and feel is actually just as important as what we eat. We discuss how your dharma, your life purpose, is a missing key to health. We talk about how our overworking culture is obviously making us chronically ill and how sleep is so crucial for our well-being. And we discuss all sorts of things. I really picked his brain and asked questions that you guys have been asking me, and he did an amazing job at just making it simple and clear so all of us can benefit from his wisdom. We also recorded the video of this interview. It was done over Skype, and you can see us talking on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/SaharaRose. So I hope you enjoyed this interview. It was truly such a privilege to have such a recognized Ayurvedic doctor on the Highest Self podcast, and I hope you support his book, Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life. And we're going to be doing a giveaway of the book on my Instagram at I Am Sahara Rose. So stay tuned for that so you can win a free copy. Without further ado, enjoy the episode.
Welcome, Dr. Suhas. Thank you so much for coming on the Highest Self podcast. It's so lovely to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you, Sahara. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Yes, you've been such an inspiration for me in my journey. I read Hot Belly Diet maybe 4 years ago, and you've been such a role model to me. So thank you so much for making the time from the bottom of my heart. And I'm so excited to introduce your work to this younger generation who's just learning what Ayurveda is. So the first question that I'd love to ask you is, what makes you your highest self?
I think what makes me my highest self is to be connected with my greater self on an everyday basis. We are all human beings, and it is our utmost role and responsibility to be in that quiet space on an everyday basis, where you train yourself to be connected with that greater field of reality, where everything is changing and you're connecting yourself to that non-changing self of yours. So when I say I am at my highest self is when I am being mindful, being aware that this is just a passing cloud. Whatever the experience is happening, to a certain degree, it's an illusion. To a certain degree, it's a transition through which I am just being mindful of watching, observing, and witnessing the things as they come and go by. So that allows me to restore my stability in terms of my body, mind, and intellect. And more importantly, it kind of dispassionately detaches me from what is happening. Either it doesn't make me too excited or exhilarated with something going my way, or it doesn't make me dull or depressed or sad or unhappy because the things is not exactly what I was hoping for. So when I say that my greatest self is my ability to connect myself with that field of perceptive reality, which you had to slowly train yourself.
Yes. And
I've been working on this for a greater part in my life, and I would say that is the biggest thing, and that is the biggest gift that everyone should explore and walk around with it, because you can't escape it, but somehow we become so disconnected from that. That's why it becomes the perils and the pain and the pleasures and the misery of life becomes 10x more potent because of that. So I would advise everyone to be connecting yourself with your own greater self and have that heightened sense of awareness, so that you are not only just doing that only during meditation, but cultivate a degree where every experience you are able to watch and witness and let it unfold how it is happening.
Yes, exactly. And what you're describing is the Sanskrit word Atman, the endless part of your own soul. So I think that will really resonate with so many listeners.
And the word Atman simply means to be present also. It simply means to be present, to watch, to witness, to be passive in this creation. The infinite field of silence is. The field of silence is the background of all the dynamic activity of life, and your ability to be in that Atman, Paramatman, Purusha, the field of consciousness, whatever you call. And it is human to experience some of these things. But it is what I call it as genuinely human when you are in a state of human being, not a state of human doing all the time.
Absolutely. I love that. And I would love to know your journey of how you came to be where you are, how Ayurveda came into your life, and what made you move to the United States.
Well, I think it's an interesting journey. I was born and brought up in India in a traditional Rigvedic family. So I think studying Vedic scriptures and literature is something that I grew up with. And I chose to go to an Ayurvedic medical school to study Ayurveda and specialize in Kai Chikitsa, which is an Ayurvedic internal medicine, where I did my MD in the western part of India near Pune, which is in Mumbai, actually. So I was born and brought up there. And as I finished my residency, and me and my lovely wife, who's also an Ayurvedic physician, Dr. Manisha, we started our little practice in the rural part of India. And we were happy with our little son living in a small suburb of Pune. That's when I was invited by His Holiness Maharshi Mahesh Yogi, who was the founder of Transcendental Meditation, who was looking for some young Ayurvedic couples to travel the globe to talk about yoga, Ayurveda, meditation, and the science of life, how it affects every functioning of human life as such. And we were designing courses, classes, curriculum, starting Ayurvedic clinics around the globe. And he made us travel around the globe, myself, Dr. Manisha, and our children, actually, for a pretty long time, finally settling down in US, where we were teaching at the Maharshi University in Fairfield, Iowa. And thereafter, we have settled down in lovely part of California in Santa Cruz, where we have an Ayurvedic clinic called Ayurvedic Healing, where we offer Panchakarma treatments, where we offer educational courses, consultations, and variety of different classes and courses. More importantly, this is something that I'm very passionate about. This is something what I have done for over 25 to 30 odd years now, which is more than half of my life. And more importantly, it is something that every time you go around and travel in different parts of the world, you learn so many different things, because healthcare is a lot to do with your individual ability to take care of yourself. And I think that's where we kind of missed the boat, where we outsourced our healthcare system to HMOs, thinking that they will take care of us. But I think we are going back to the very message of Ayurveda, which is personalized medicine, individualized medicine, lifestyle medicine, and there's no better template than Ayurveda to integrate all of these pieces together.
I love that, and I couldn't agree more. So I would love to first talk about hot belly diet. What does it mean to have a hot belly, and can you discuss the concept of the Agni from an Ayurvedic perspective?
Well, the Hot Belly Diet is an interesting book, because when I was in my clinical practice, I saw so many people who were feeling dull, heavy, groggy, toxic, tired, fatigue, carrying 10, 15, 20 extra pounds of weight in their body, and had absolute difficulty to lose that weight. And I was trying to clinically understand what is going on in their life. And they were all leading a pretty sedentary life, where they were not digesting their food well. It's not that they were eating bad food, but they were not digesting food. From an Ayurvedic point of view, Agni, or your digestive fire, is the cornerstone to your health and well-being. You need to probably digest and metabolize not only food, but all the experiences that you ingest. Mm. And when you're not able to do that because you're simply too busy, you're driving, you're commuting, you're stuck in a traffic jam, you're having a sedentary job for 7, 8, 9 hours, you rush back into traffic hours, you expose yourselves to a passive entertainment for a couple of hours before you sleep, and you start it all over again. Unwanted intake of heavy doses of caffeine in the morning, too much of starchy, sugary snacks, and then slowly it starts building up what we call it as the tissue sludge. And these are all undigested food with our metabolic impurities, which kind of slow down and make your digestive fire feel very sluggish. So when the Agni, or the digestive fire, is not burning properly because of these dampening of impurities, then you start accumulating this toxic sludge everywhere at a cellular level that makes you feel dull. So Agni and Ama, these are two unique concepts. Agni is to do with your digestive fire, not only your appetite, but your ability to convert food into nutrients. So it is to do with generating energy and feeling vital and vibrant and light and active and energetic as such. And then when you don't do that properly, then you accumulate this sluggishness, or what we call it as dull, gross, kind of sticky impurities, which kind of clog to the channels and slow down the functioning and the movement of the physiology, which is called as ama. And when you have more ama in the system, your agni becomes further weaker and weaker and weaker. And so I used to see a lot of patients of this situation, and they don't have any real typical disease where they can go to a doctor and someone circles an ICD code and this is what you need a treatment for, but they were feeling awful. And when I cleaned up their diet, when I gave them some simple digestive spices to improve their appetite, gave them some herbal teas to drink throughout the day, changed their dietary patterns when they were eating food, what time of the day, gave some definite routine and lifestyle changes regarding sleep and exercise and things like that, they started not only losing weight, but they started feeling really bright, active, energetic. They were able to be focused, concentrate on their work, and be more productive. Because one of the taglines that I used in Hot Belly Diet was, rekindle your fire, rekindle your life. And what it simply means is, when you are feeling so bad, then everything that you attract in your life is of that low-grade quality, which doesn't make you feel uplifted and happy. And once you start feeling really good in body, exactly the way you talk about it, Sahara, eat, feel fresh, okay? That's exactly how you should be feeling every day. Because it's not only how you feel in your body, it's the kind of destiny that you attract on an everyday basis. Mm. And I think the purpose of Agni is igniting. The English word ignition actually comes from this root Sanskrit word Agni. It is igniting the passion for life. And that igniting for the passion for life comes from a clean plant-based diet, comes from eating light, eating right, and becoming bright. And more importantly, allowing yourselves to digest and metabolize those foods that you eat. And more importantly, you allow that feeling of lightness and clarity at a cognitive level, but more importantly, you are able to adopt a positive lifestyle changes. It slowly cultivates a positive mindset, because Agni, it also burns the unwanted cobwebs of fears and resentments and old grudges and fears and things like that, because it's the radiant light of knowledge. Agni is also radiant light of knowledge, which dispels the ignorance that we have. It simply motivates you from inside out to lead a positive, healthier, and happier lifestyle.
I love that. And I love your explanation of it. And I think it will really resonate and hit home with people, because in my generation, anxiety is a huge problem right now. A lot of people, especially women, went towards these diets. I know I was a raw vegan. I only ate salads and smoothies, and my Agni was depleted. So can you talk about what eating too much raw food can do to your Agni?
Well, again, we always say plant-based diet is a good food and good diet to have. But whenever digestibility is very important, and there's an interesting saying in Ayurveda that we say that to eat is human, but to digest is divine.
I love that.
So it is not what you eat, what you digest. And so ultimately, you have to make that food suitable for your digestive strength. And if you're eating food, however clean, healthy, organic that food is, if it is not suitable to your digestive strength, then you may create ama. You may create an organic ama from it, but you will still create some ama from it. Mm-hmm. So what I mean to say is that making it digestibly suitable. So the whole concept of Ayurvedic cooking is not cooking food to death, but making it, bringing it to a life so that the body can utilize it and the food and the nutrients are absolutely bioavailable. Mm. When you're eating a lot of cold food, when you're eating foods which are on the run very quickly, you warm something for a few minutes and eat frozen dinners, things like that, which do not have the kind of Agni in them, because we want to kindle the Agni in the food. And the Agni in the food is the enzymatic life in the food itself. And you want to restore that enzymatic life in the food without cooking it to death. And you're lightly steaming it or lightly cooking it or gently adding some mild spices to this food actually ignites your Agni and helps your digestive strength. So you eat the right food at the right time and you are eating to help and support your digestive strength. And that is the purpose. So when I see a lot of young people trying to eat the food on the go, and especially cold smoothies and raw salads and things. It is clean food, but many times it's a bit too heavy that you can't digest. And depending upon your body type, you also have different variations in your digestive strength apart from your mind-body type. So if you are a pitta type, you are having a very strong appetite and a strong digestive strength. If you don't eat right food at the right time, it might start creating more heartburn, hyperacidity, inflammation, and may digest the tissues itself because it's not getting the right fuel at the right time. Mm-hmm. Vata body type, they have a little bit more what we call it as Vishamagni, which is a variable appetite. So you have to really eat in sync and eat mindfully in the small and the right amount of food, which is warm, which is slightly oily, unctuous, and make it easily digestible. And for Kapha type, the digestive strength is a little bit weak and sluggish and dull, called as Manda Agni. So you have to eat the warm foods with warm, pungent, heating spices in small amount, and again, blended foods, vegetable soups, things like that, which are small portions of food, less in carbohydrates because they are all very kapha aggravating. So eating according to your body type and respecting your Agni is the very wisdom of Ayurvedic medicine. And you can only do that if you're mindfully aware who you are, how you respond to each food and every experience. And I think your book elaborates this wonderfully, where Ayurveda is all about your experiences. It's taking control of your own health and well-being. It's not what is in the plate. It's about how you digest it, how you metabolize it. And food, which is sometimes overrated, I think, is just 1/5 of the nutrition that you take in. From an Ayurvedic perspective, we define diet as something that you take in. From any field of perception, from any mode of intellect, that is diet. So what you touch, what you feel, what you smell, what you hear is all diet. And so you have to pay attention to everything, all the experience that you ingest throughout the day, plus the food in your plate. If you are eating cleaner food and you are paying attention to ingesting positive experiences and metabolizing it properly, I think you will have a very healthy, happy, purposeful life.
I love that. And I couldn't agree with you more. And I see when people are following their Dhatama path, suddenly their health and their digestion becomes better because they're ingesting so much more positive vibrations and energy. So I would love to go ahead.
And this is very interesting what you say. You use the term dharma. Dharma is the purpose and what you feel that you're absolutely in tune with, what your skill sets are, who you are, what you do all day long, and what fills your day with this kind of excitement and drive and passion that it becomes a second nature of yours to think this way, to do this way. Because diet is something when someone puts you on a diet, it's forced, let me do it for 14 days or 3 weeks or 1 month or something like that. It is something that this is not I usually eat. I will do it for a short amount of time. Mm-hmm. And an Ayurvedic way of eating is you think this way, you behave this way, you eat this way, no matter what. And once you ingest that, then you are not having this yo-yoing of the diet that you go in and out constantly. And that creates a lot of stress on your digestive strength. One of the biggest reasons for disruption of Agni is variable dieting patterns. Some days you have a 2,000 calorie diet to 500 calories diet, sometimes totally vegan, sometimes totally paleo diet, sometimes you restrict certain foods, sometimes you restrict certain foods, you fast a few days a week, suddenly you go full swing of eating whatever you can eat on the other days. It's very confusing. So many things that come out until and unless you resonate with something and you embody the wisdom and you start eating, thinking, living this way, it will not become a way of life for you. And eating has to become a way of life. This is the way you shop. This is the way you stock your pantry. And this is the way you cook and prepare food and ingest it in the right mindful way.
I love that. And Homer, there's just so much I want to ask you about. Well, the first question that I receive so much is, what if you are between Vata, Kapha? You have the bloating, gas, constipation, anxiety, but you feel sluggish and you're gaining weight. Which diet do you follow?
Well, I think Vata is a cold dosha and Kapha is a cold dosha also. Mm-hmm. So the qualities which are similar in Vata and Kapha is warm. So it has to be something warming and heating, which is balancing Vata and Kapha both. So the diet has to be with certain spices, which are going to balance vata as well as kapha. It has to be a little bit of balance between not too oily and not too dry also. So it is something where if you want to prevent something, the food has to be cooked, which is good for vata, which is good for kapha as well. It has to be mixed with certain spices. It has to be slightly oily. It has to be blended and made easily digestible, because vata people have variable appetite. Kapha people have a weak appetite, or manda agni as such. So if you are doing both of those things, it will minimize the gassy, bloated sensation. And this is something which when I put people on to this diet, and there are a couple of herbs that I recommended in my book, Hot Belly Diet. One was Trikatu, which was three pungent spices that you can take as a digestive supplement. And these are not enzymes that you supplement, but these are something which improve your digestive strength and makes your fire more alive. And Triphala is something which is more good for an everyday detoxification, cleansing. It's a rejuvenative tonic, but it helps you purge things properly. And whenever you are doing something, eating the clean food with the spices and taking the right kind of supplements, and more importantly, eating a little bit less than what you can eat and digest. And that is the key. So when you're doing this, you can actually balance vata and kapha, both of these doshas. Many times, they are mirror images to each other. They are opposite in terms of qualities. And when you're able to do that, you can balance both easily. And I think that is the aspect of Ayurveda. Ayurveda is a science of qualities. It is all about quality, understanding the qualities of everything. What you do, what you eat, what kind of weather it is, what kind of experience you're having, it all has certain qualities to it. And once you change the qualities to reset both of those things, that's exactly the key.
I love that. And I just couldn't agree with you more. And I think that's going to be really helpful for people, because we're so used to looking at food as macronutrients, micronutrients, how many calories it has. Like, our bodies are calculators. We put things in our phones. We're checking MyFitnessPal. And it's like, look at the gunas, look at the qualities, and it'll tell us so much more.
And many times I see people who walk around with these gadgets, and those gadgets are not really tapping into certain things. And I saw one of the patients recently, and she was wearing a little gadget on her arm. And I said, "What is that?" And she said, "Oh, you don't know this? Let me tell you." And she pressed one button and she said, "Oh, this tells me that I have burned so many calories. And this also gives me food options. I can have two scoops of yogurt. I can eat eight almonds. I need to drink half an ounce of water right now." And I says, "God, we have become so dumb now that we can't even figure out whether we are thirsty or hungry."
Right.
And I'm not joking. There was a research which came out where most of the Americans actually reached for a snack when, in fact, they were thirsty.
So true.
The busyness in our life is making us disconnected from the basic urges, whether we are having a bowel movement, where our bladders are full, whether we are sleepy at the right time. And I have so many people that I tell them to go to bed by 9:30, 10, and they are very sleepy. They are yawning, they're tired, and they're ready to crash. But they look at the clock, it's 9 o'clock, 9:30, and who wants to sleep at that time?
Right.
And then you go past that, and then suddenly it's past midnight, and then you end up in opening and closing the refrigerator door and going for some snacks. And then it's almost the next day when you sleep, and you wake up tired, dull, heavy. You need more caffeine, which disrupts your digestion, assimilation, metabolic function completely. And then it starts a vicious cycle. So I think one of the premise of this new book, which I wrote about Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life, is understanding what you're doing at what time is equally important.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell us more about this concept of your schedule being just as important, if not more important, than the foods that you're eating?
Well, and I think you are doing a wonderful job, Sahara, in at least talking to the millennials about the priorities.
We need it.
We need it. And we need to schedule our health. That is the most important. That is your full-time job. And we have all become so busy. And busyness is new happiness, they call it nowadays, where your iCal calendars are pinging all the time. Your Outlook calendars is busy and flooded. You show up for work first and you leave the last. just for job insecurity, trying to be productive and everything. And I think we have all cultivated this mentality that time is money. And then we equate that with how much money we make. And the fact is, the more cash rich Americans are getting, the more time poor we are all becoming. And it's a very limited source that we can't do with. So the more and more money we have, the more and more precious our time becomes. And people are not paying attention to their leisure time. People are not paying attention to cooking and preparing food for themselves, recourcing on buying the meals most of the time, trying to go on the go. In fact, this is the country where we invented drive-through coffee and fast food and things like that. Who wants to waste time and fixing something? In a few minutes, you're out the door. So I think when we are, our priorities are not right, when we are not paying attention to why do we earn money for and how do we nourish ourselves, what time do we go to sleep and how do we recharge and nourish our life itself. And I don't really blame millennials because whatever the advances in the technology has happened, it has taken our life to a maddening pace. The smartphones, the boundaries of working have become invisible. You are on call all the time. It means 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, you get emails, you get texts, you are constantly reached out, you are responding to something. An average person works close to 13 and a half hours each day because of their smartphones. And the whole necessity to respond to the text, the necessity to respond to the email, you're on call all the time. The first thing people do, I'm not talking about you as an enlightened person, but people out there who are checking, first thing they wake up is their phone. And the last thing before they go is their phone. And every time, whether it's a good message, good emails, bad emails, whatever you're looking, is swirling into your mind, into those polarities, even when you're asleep. So I think we have just taken our life to a maddening pace. And it was, 10 years ago, we were all happy with a 56K modem, isn't it? Where it was okay. We were still using computers. The countries were being run and the travels were happening and everything was there. But now, in last few years, it has really disrupted our internal physiological clocks significantly. The new and the latest research is all talking about chronobiology. Chrono means time, and the timing is everything in the biological functioning. And this is so hardwired in our cells, in our genes, everywhere, that it's not only when you wake and when you sleep, but there are numerous functions that go into our body which are pretty set in time. And when we are disrupting, and we try our best to disrupt that, we eat whenever we want, we go to sleep whenever we want, we have sex whenever we want, we are having entertainment ideas, sometimes stimulating, sometimes violent, even the social media and everything that you talk about, it's toying with your endocrine system, it's toying with your nervous system constantly. You're almost giving your keys of happiness to someone else because if they're having a jolly good time, vacation in Bahamas, and you look at your life and you're working hard here, then you feel bad about it. You actually feel depressed by seeing someone else happy somewhere else. And this never used to be a part of your everyday life. But very soon that we are seeing that these things are shifting. And not only working individuals, this is happening in teenage kids. And I'm really worried about them because their nervous system is becoming so vata imbalanced, where they're becoming ungrounded, restless, they can't sit, they can't eat quietly, with millions of possibilities, with just a simple internet connection that they have. And then we are exposing and training them to actually do those things and not able to really focus what is more important in life. And the purpose of this book, Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life, is work is important. But your leisure time is more important. Your health is important. You going to bed at a proper time is very important. You keeping all the moving parts in your body moving is very important. Exercising regularly is equally important for your mind, body, and spirit together. You trying to be mindful and be aware of what you're doing at what time. You connected with the elements of nature outside. We're spending time. There's nothing better reservoir of energy than nature itself. The air which is filled of prana, you go to a mountaintop or to a lake or to a forest or to an ocean, you are replenishing that energy. And when you're not able to do that day in and day out, That's when everything gets stuck. You get stressed out. You feel unhappy. The recent research says 63% of Americans do not like what they do. They are having this high rate of job dissatisfaction because they feel so pressed and so depressed because of how much money they have and what do they need to do in terms of time. And I think that pressure of time where everything is slipping away. And I see this a lot in my clinical practice, and especially young millennials need to hear this very well, because you can't get away with those clocks. You have to do the right things at the right time. Is that right? You have to go to sleep at a proper time. You have to probably, if you are interested in getting married and having children, there's a clock for that. You need to do the things at the right time. Mm. You can't constantly abuse those things, and suddenly you are stuck with trying to go through fertility treatments and trying to forcefully do certain things or dominate the clocks of the body by doing something artificial and unnatural. And there's no right way to do a wrong thing. And we see this. And I see so many people, I practice in the Bay Area, who spend their health to get some wealth. And thereafter, they would like to share their wealth with you to regain the health, which is not always possible.
Absolutely. And it's so true. We're on all the time. And that's why anxiety, almost everyone I know has had a panic attack, you know, in their 20s.
Forget your phone and you're on a freeway, you'll get a panic attack.
Right.
It was what, 5 years ago, we were opening our AAA maps by the roadside and figuring out where we were going.
Yeah.
Without that, we don't know where we are going at times. We are lost. And it's a literal term, we are lost. We are really not knowing where we are going. We are not sure that what we are earning money for, what is the purpose of money, and what is the utility of that, whether we can cultivate healthy biological relationship, whether we are even present in that relationship, to be a mindful, vigilant parent, to be a partner who is mindful and self-caring and loving and present during conversations. And so I think it is the need where the pressure of time is kind of hijacking the physiological balance. And once those clocks, internal clocks, get disrupted at a genetic level. So this year's Nobel Prize went to three American physiologists who kind of discovered the role of the clock genes and how they reset everything. And it's like an orchestra where these genetic clocks are performing in symphony with everything, your heart, lung, liver, kidneys, at a cellular level, so much of function, insulin resistance. We talk about detoxification, elimination, neurotransmitter conduction. All of those are biochemical symphony that we talk about. And it's all triggered by the genes and the cells talking to each other. And when we are not allowing enough time to do the right activity at the right time, we are disrupting all of those things. Late night eating, late night snacking, bad qualities of breakfast. When I wrote Hot Belly Diet, one of the things which I wrote in the book was 71% of Americans consume most of their calories after 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So when you eat late and sleep late, it's the prescription to gain weight. Eat late to gain some weight, sleep late to gain some weight. And when you eat late, you wake up feeling dull, heavy, groggy, toxic, and tired, and you start your day in the same manner. It affects your sleep. You're snoring in the night. You're having sleep apnea. You wake up tired, feeling low energy. You need loads of caffeine to get you going. It disrupts your appetite. Since you are not hungry at the right time, you're snacking bad foods because you are just driven by the stress, how you feel throughout the day. And very soon, you are exhausted and tired, and you constantly need those pick-me-up kind of drinks. And so the epidemic of energy drinks and the rivers of caffeine that are flowing in everybody's body, this is what I'm talking about. Very soon, you take one wrong step, and it kind of disrupts the cascade of molecules and neurotransmitters in the body as such. And very soon, you have an imbalance, you have a chronic disease, you name it, you can have it.
So true. And I see that happen all the time. So what is your opinion on intermittent fasting? That's something that's very popular now. A lot of people are purposely putting all their calories after 3 o'clock because they think it will give them more energy and help them lose weight. So what is your view on that?
Well, as I said, that fasting is a good idea. Fasting is one of the most underutilized healing modalities that we know. It is being used for thousands and thousands of years. But when we say intermittent fasting, where people try to fast at certain amount of time and then binge onto more amount of food, that is very bad. And I see this quite a bit. And there was a popular book which came out where 2 days you don't really eat anything.
Right.
And in the other 5 days you eat anything you want, as much as you want. And that is a real bad type of fasting. And the same with intermittent fasting, where you can consume and you can eat anything till 9 to 7. And from 7 o'clock in the evening till 9 o'clock in the morning, you won't eat anything. It's not that I'm not eating anything for this time and then I have a license to eat anything I want during this time. That's not what I mean to say.
Mm-hmm.
We're eating mindfully. We are eating the right food at the right time in the right proportion. And that is very important. Yes, I do believe if you give your digestive system a good 12-hour rest, that is phenomenal. That is very important. And that's what I discussed in the hot belly diet. When sun is waking up in the morning, it's a tender sunlight. So you want to probably eat a lighter breakfast around 8:30 in the morning. And it has to be really small, light breakfast because the sunlight is pretty tender and very gentle. And you are waking up after 7, 8, 9 hours of doing nothing. And then you eat lighter breakfast when the sun is prominent and peeking up in the sky. That's when you eat your largest meal of the day. And when the sun is setting, it's the fading sunlight, and you're eating the lighter meal close to sunset, so that you have at least 3 hours before you go to sleep. And then you digest that food, whatever you have in the dinner, before you go to sleep. So ideally 6:37 till 8 o'clock next day morning, at least for 12 hours, you're not eating anything. And that's a good fast. That's a good way to clean your ama. And this is something, it's good for each body type. It is very safe. It is very effective. And it is something that you need to learn and doing this on an everyday basis. One another technique of fasting that I experienced, that I explained in my book, Hot Belly Diet, was not to eat anything between breakfast, lunch, and dinner. To fast in between meals. And trust me, it was so difficult for people to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Many people felt that we were training ourselves to eat every 2 hours because that's what we thought, that that gives us energy. But that is not true. So you don't eat anything from breakfast to lunch. You are going to have a decent breakfast, so eat your breakfast at the right time. Don't eat anything. You can have water, you can have some herbal tea, but don't eat anything till lunch. And from lunch to dinner, don't snack. Allow that food to be completely digested and feel the natural sense of hunger.
I love that.
We feel this false hunger, which is a dropping of the blood sugar. That's what people think, that they are hungry. And that is not true hunger, but that's not a genuine hunger. It's a false signal. And the more you keep on eating, the more irregular your blood sugar is going to get. And every 2 hours, it's going to fall down and it's going to mimic as if you're hungry, which is not genuine.
So true. Now, what do you think for people who exercise? They do a strenuous exercise and they're told you need to eat something before and have protein immediately after. Do you think you should do that on top of your meals, or that's not true?
Well, as I said, you can do strenuous exercise, which is a good idea. In those people who are actually burning calories that are physically active, they can increase their portions, the kind of breakfast what they eat, and the kind of lunch or the dinner what they have. So if it's a growing age, young teenage kids, athletes and things like that, they can increase the quantity. And you can go for some lighter snacks, which are healthy and easily digestible. You can have some shakes and blended smoothies and things like that. But again, it's not advisable until and unless you are really using 1 or 2 or 3 hours of physical activity on an everyday basis, which is very few people who do that.
Okay, so if someone like after work at 5 o'clock goes to a workout class, and then can they drink a smoothie and then have dinner, or should they just wait until dinner?
They can have a little bit of snack or smoothie just to give them the energy to do that, but it should not be something which affects and influences their dinner. So if you're having a snack which actually makes you less hungry, and then you come back late and then you eat late, and that is something which is a disruption.
Right. I totally understand that. Yes, I think we've all been taught by the diet industry that you have to keep your metabolism going. So we're told to constantly be snacking, and in between breakfast and lunch, eat some almonds, and then have a smoothie, and then have some hummus. And we're just never detoxifying because we're always eating.
And it's eating when you're not even needing to eat, actually. We are overfed and undernourished. As a society, we are overfed and undernourished. And the reason being that we are probably just recommending standard blanket advice for everyone. And people selectively hear that, okay, this is what everybody's telling, but it is for those people who do 2-3 hours of workout, and this is what it is, my lifestyle is, and sitting in a cubicle 7, 8, 9 hours, I'm not doing anything. So maybe it doesn't apply to you. And so even if you do, say, 40 minutes or 1 hour exercise in a 24-hour cycle, it's still very less compared to an active lifestyle that you talk about.
Right. Exactly. So I would love to know, I know in Hot Belly Diet, you had like eggs and animal products, and this is kind of the discussion in Ayurveda. Do you think that one can eat animal products, or it should be strictly vegan or vegetarian?
Well, I mean, we encourage them to eat healthier versions of animal products and slowly steer them away from that, because you can't give them something without taking something away from them, or the other way around. Is that right? Mm-hmm. You can't take something away from them without giving them something. So it is a healthy way of looking what they are doing already, so that they don't feel as if they are going onto a road which is very less known to them. And then it's slowly understanding and slowly taking off those crutches as the diet goes into the next stage. I am a big proponent of a plant-based diet. I don't eat meat all my life, and I don't eat animal products. So more importantly, what happens is when you cultivate a habit, and this whole myth of protein that everybody talks about is something which needs to be debunked at some point. You don't need the heavy dosage of mega proteins and loaded with fats unnecessarily. And so eating clean, eating plant-based, and eating the right amount of protein, which are coming from legumes, nuts, and beans, and complex grains that you are able to easily digest, that is important. Because the foods have become very impure now. So slowly minimizing what you have been eating and reducing like a funnel, so eating less and eating the right kind of foods and creating those understanding and that awareness was the purpose of it. So in the Hot Belly Diet, and even in Ayurveda, the classical ancient Ayurvedic literature have described all types of fish, all types of animal products, have described all kind of different meats and milks and things like that. And they even encourage those things, because it's different strokes for different folks. And depending upon who you are, what your quality of life is, and how you lead, and then slowly meet them at an Ayurvedic level, and slowly lead them to a yogic lifestyle and to a yogic mindset, through which they are looking at food as one source that they can get prana from. Because the three things that we really need that Mother Nature gives us free of charge or free of cost is air, which is the most important one. Second is water, and food, which is the third one. So it's the third on the ladder. Food is one third your need to stay alive. You need to be drinking enough water, you should be breathing nicely, and more importantly, eating less food just to keep you alive. And that's a healthy way. Those people who eat less live much longer.
Yes.
And there's enough research, and all the communities and spiritual communities have actually used that technique of eating less to bring you close to God. They use a Sanskrit term called upavasa. Upavasa means being close to your own self and to your divinity, or to your God, you would say.
Yes, I'm so excited. I'm going to Varanasi and Rishikesh in December. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so excited to be with the sadhus who practice this in their everyday life, and just being in that energy is so inspirational.
Wonderful.
So, yes. So I would love to know your opinion on autoimmune disease. Is something so on the rise. So many young women suffer from it. And a lot of them are told to go on paleo diets to remove all grains and legumes. So they say, how can I follow Ayurveda but not eat grains and legumes? So I would love to know your opinion on that.
Well, I think what is creating autoimmune condition is a rampant epidemic of inflammation in the system. People, and I see this in my clinical practice a lot, that they are inflamed, they have inflamed gut microbiome, as we say. And what has happened is that because of the pressure, because of the stress, because of the chronic anxiety, because of chronic disruptions into their daily routine and everything else, they have generated this pitta. And these are all young, active individuals in their pitta phase of life. And in their pitta phase of life are generating this chronic inflammation, which is creating signals where your immune system becomes hyperactive and start targeting their own organs and organ systems. It could be thyroid, it could be your gut, it could be anything else. And once you have an inflammation, you become intolerant to many foods. You become sensitive to many foods. So it's not the foods which are bad. It is what you have done to your body is bad. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are foods which we have also created, which are designer foods, which are pretty impure in many ways. Okay, mm-hmm. But you need to stay away from that. You need to be probably slowly rekindling your Agni. You need to be detoxifying your system. You need to be cooling down the unwanted heat and pitta. And that is a condition which in Ayurveda, it is called as high pitta and low Agni.
Mm.
Okay, so it's high pitta and low Agni. So they have high pitta where they're inflamed everywhere, but their Agni has gotten weak. So you have to use the right kind of cooling Ayurvedic spices and herbs, everything, and detoxify liver so that the pitta is cooled down and the Agni is kindled. And once you do that, then they're able to eat the right food. Because till that time, you can stay away from everything. Every time you're exposed to certain things, you will be probably going back to eating something which is going to make you sensitive. And I see this all the time, because in the name of paleo diet, you are eating even more inflammatory food. You are even eating more toxic food, which is going to disrupt. And you name it, you can have it. I suddenly see that you were put on a diet for some time, and suddenly a chronic disease came out of nowhere. And it becomes very, very difficult to manage that down the road.
Mm, so true. So what is your suggestion for someone that might have the high pitta and low Agni? What are the diets and herbs you recommend?
Well, as I said, bitter greens, which is green and cooling foods, which are where you need to blend them. You can make vegetable juices out of it in small portions. You can add some hot water so you're not drinking ice cold juices as such. Blended vegetable soups is a good idea. Eating lots of greens with mild spices like fennel and coriander and good quality turmeric and fresh ginger is a good idea to add those foods into their diet, making sure that you're not eating any packaged and processed food. You're eating mostly God-made foods and not man-made foods. So anything which is packaged and processed, you're staying away from that. You develop a habit of cooking some simple food with yourself. You can combine small portions of grains, maybe some brown rice or quinoa or barley or amaranth or a variety of different portions of smaller complex carbohydrates. These are not low carbs, but slow carbs. So slow carbs are creating this satiety and feeling where you can volumize your stool, and it actually helps your microbiome to heal because of the fiber content of these foods itself. And as a community, we are eating foods which are so devoid of fiber, which is also a main reason why we create this gut inflammation. So when you are having these kind of diet, adding the right kind of fiber, eating small portions of these grains with good amount of fruits and vegetables, soap, nuts and seeds, pitta pacifying diet and lifestyle in general, going to sleep, because sleep is one of the most potent anti-inflammatory activity that you will ever do. And I wrote in my new book, Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life, as sleep as the miracle drug. Yes. Because it is something that you need to take this drug every night for 7, 8, 9 hours when you're asleep. Then you wake up completely less inflamed. And when you're constantly toying with erratic sleeping patterns, you're going to have more and more inflammation because of that. So going to sleep at a proper time is very important. Exercising releases the heat from the body, improves the circulation. You sweat and detoxify, cleanse, and you bring the lymphatic return. So it actually enhances the metabolic acceleration and the detoxification of the body at the same time. So physical movement, exercise, yoga is a great way to do that, because you are doing through proper breathing patterns, bending, twisting, turning, and slowing down the pace of exercising is one of the best way to cool down the pitta.
Mm.
It's all about the racy quality of the mind that creates these challenges. But if you follow some of these things, and there are lots of pitta pacifying teas that we have on my website. You can take a look at it. It's ayurvedichealing.net. Pitta tea, what we call it, is much more cooling and soothing in nature. We also have some blood cleansers and blood purifiers. These are the most potent pitta pacifying herbs that you can take, like neem, guduchi, shatavari, kutki. These are all pitta pacifying herbs, and they're also good for liver, helping you to reduce unwanted heat from the body and kind of retrain the body to ignite the agni as such. So if you are able to slowly kindle the agni and get rid of unwanted pitta, I think you are in the same zone.
I love that, and such great advice for us all to take home. Another question is, a lot of people work overnight shifts. They're nurses or whatever else. What is your suggestion for them?
Well, even the World Health Organization has stated that graveyard shift is a known carcinogen.
Wow.
So we can't really erase this fact that people who are having these kind of shifts is going to disrupt the whole physiological functioning significantly. So I have quite a few patients who are of that kind, and it is an important service. It's a great service for everyone else, so that you and me can sleep peacefully when someone else is working and vigilant and taking care of something when it is needed. But these people have to be super cautious about how they get enough sleep in during the daytime, what do they eat, how their sleeping pattern is. They should not be eating big meal in the breakfast and then sleeping on top of that. They should be probably exercising. They should not be reposing heavy duty caffeine in the middle of the night to keep them awake. All of those things, if you clean that up, you can minimize the toxic load, but you can't completely escape from it also. Okay? Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. But I see lots of people who are not doing graveyard shifts or night shifts, but are still acting as if they are doing night shift.
Right.
They're watching television and having passive entertainment till 1 o'clock in the night, late night shows, working late night, communicating with other teams in Taiwan, India, a variety of different things, wake up early morning for these early morning meetings that they have. So they are still functioning as if they are traveling through different time zones. Mm-hmm. And there's a different concept that I describe in my book, which is called as social jet lag. And that is terrible, especially all the millennials should know about it. Mm-hmm. Where you are pretty decent Monday to Friday. You show up for work 8:30 in the morning, come back 5:30, eat clean food, try to do everything, try mm-hmm. to exercise. But come Friday, you have license to do anything you want. And then you are eating late. You are going to average restaurant wait is an hour or so if you go to any place and everybody is eating Friday night, 9, 10, 11 in the night. And you have a license to stay awake because it's Saturday next day. So you're staying past midnight. And then since you slept so late, you wake up way too late in the morning. So Saturday morning, you wake up 9, 10, 11 sometimes, and then everything slows down. Then your breakfast becomes your brunch. Brunch becomes your lunch. Lunch becomes your dinner. Mm-hmm. And then again, Saturday night is again free night. Whatever you want to do, you do the same abuse of your body. You eat too much. You drink too much. And then do the same pattern on Sunday. You wake up late night. And Monday, you have to go back to work and start your day at 6:30 in the morning. And when you wake up at 6:30 in the morning, it's as if you have gone a cross-country trip and gone to a three-hour time zone difference and start your day that way. Mm-hmm. You are having a jet lag that will stay with you for 3 days. So if you're having 3 days of abuse, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it's going to take three more days for the body to reset the physiological functioning, that you'll be hungry at a proper time, or you'll be sleepy at a proper time, or you will even have a bowel movement at the proper time. So many physiological functions that are disrupted because of that weekend abuse. And then by the time it regulates, it's Thursday or Friday. And then one more time, it's Friday, and you can keep that all over again. And then you keep on doing this in a zombie manner. And then sooner or later, you are struggling with weight that you can't brush aside. You can't lose the weight. You say Monday to Friday, I'm so clean, but this is what I do on this weekend. And so it's not about how you live, but how Mother Nature and the birds and the animals, everyone do that. Everyone does that in a way where it's in sync and in harmony with the light and with the rhythms of nature itself.
Yeah, it's so true. And I wrote in the book, it's hard because a lot of social things start, like nightclubs and bars, start at midnight.
Yeah.
So when you arrive at midnight, it finishes at 2, you get home at 3, you're in bed by 4, the sun's coming up, and this is what most millennials do every weekend.
And as I said, millennials are very precarious, and this is the first time in our U.S. history that our kids are going to have a shorter lifespan than ourselves.
Wow.
And the reason is the abuse of the body, and you're young and you may not feel it, but trust me. you're aging very, very quickly because of this abuse.
So, definitely.
You are youthful, you are healthy, you are active, you are agile, you are vibrant, and you need to really use it properly.
Yes. And
you need to really funnel your passion into ways that you can make difference in someone else's life. The purpose of human life is to make difference in someone else's life. Use your skill set. Develop skill sets that are meaningful and purposeful. And do something. And sensory overuse, misuse, underuse, and abuse is one of the main reasons for any disease and any imbalance that you create. And Deepak talks about it very passionately also, because when we are having this erratic lifestyle, we are chronically inflamed in our body. And this inflammation at the gut level or at the cellular level very soon becomes hostile tendencies in our mind and the decisions that we make, which are very nasty, bad for relationship, bad for our companies, bad for our organization, bad for our workspace, financial decisions. And very soon, healthy individuals who become inflamed become very hostile, become very violent in their thinking, physical, mental, emotional, verbal violence. And that is spreading like a wildfire everywhere. And we are seeing the epidemic of this everywhere. It all starts with bad foods and bad lifestyle, where our minds are getting very inflamed and hostile and violent, which needs to be cooled down.
Absolutely. We're in a pitta world right now, and we see it in the news all the time. So I love how you bring this up, because I lead a program called Doshas and Dharma, and it's how your dosha is connected to your dharma. So I would love to have you speak about that. And do you see that connection happen?
Absolutely, because this is a huge connection. It's a huge connection because knowingly and unknowingly, this is slowly changing the very functional basis of your medicine itself. Even the functional medicine have labeled doshas. They call it as kapha type, as retentive types. These are retentive types where they retain food and water and impurities. They talk pitta types as inflammatory types. So they generate inflammation. They're very sensitive to certain foods and certain practices and stress. To become very inflamed and angry and hostile. And Vata people as degenerative types. So they shrivel, they become ungrounded, they become more anxious and more fearful and slowly become more degenerative in nature. So even from a functional medicine point of view, the Ayurvedic mind-body type is very related to the mind that you create, the mindset that you will create, and the kind of life and the destiny that you will attract. So the purpose for resetting our dharma is to identify who we are, how to be in our body and mind to understand who we are and start leading our life from there. So then your life becomes a purposeful dharma where you are doing your duty, you are achieving what you are destined to achieve. More importantly, you're able to optimize your functioning. You're not minimizing and blocking your potential because of your own actions.
That's so perfect. And I talk about different, you know, because in your 20s, it's the time that you're choosing your career, you're choosing your spouse. It's so many decisions, and it can be really crippling for people. So what are the careers you think that each dosha should navigate towards?
Well, as I said, that Vata is a very energetic, creative thing. So you talk about artists, creative people, entrepreneurs, starting companies, having creative ideas. They're very bubbly, very energetic.
I'm very Vata.
Setting something. So you love to talk and you probably bring the best out of people and you're communicating and spreading this message, writing books, giving talks, variety of different things in which you are constantly shifting. You're not sitting and bogged down by doing one thing at a time. Pitta people, they're good in holding together. They're very clear and linear and rational and logical in their thinking, very sharp in their decision-making. So running and operating a company, maybe accountancy, doctors, where you need to make decisions very quickly. Those kind of occupations are very, very good for Pitta type. And Kapha people, they're naturally happy-go-easy people, human resources, maintenance, things like that, personal kind of jobs. Those are really good. These are good mentors. They're good teachers. They're good people to feel inspired. So I think there's an innate tendency for each dosha that they can be very functional in many different ways. So I think you need to really understand who you are and what you do. And sometimes you bring in the opposite principle to balance that. If I'm a kapha type and I have a sedentary job, it doesn't mean you have to quit your job and do something else. You have to make a conscious connection that if I'm sitting all day long, I start my day with this physical exercise. I end my day with this physical exercise. Since I'm sitting all day, I have to consciously reduce the heavy amount of calories that I consume and eat foods which are more or less light and easy to digest and those kind of things. So I think you can always adopt a lifestyle if you're connected with your own self, if you know who you are, how you think, and how your body thinks and behaves.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think it's really important because people see, oh, I'm just a kapha, so I can only be this way. But it's all about bringing that vata, bringing that pitta back up so you can be balanced and not be an imbalanced kapha, but be a balanced kapha.
Absolutely. And these doshas, they work hand in hand like friends. Yes. We are the one who disrupt that at times. So they know exactly how to work with each other. And if you are leading a simple life and in accordance with the laws of nature and with the timing, and with the timing of as how it happens, I think the key is awareness is the key to reinvent your body. Because it was the old school of thought that you are predestined to have certain diseases, you are genetically inclined. We talk about Ayurveda as a science of epigenetics. It's all about your environment, how it affects your genetic behavior. And if you change your environment, you have a brand new different body, which is thinking, acting very differently. And it is a science of life, and there's a reason why we call it a science of life.
Absolutely. So if there's any one last message you'd like to leave the millennials with, what would that be?
Well, I think they should definitely pick up my book, Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life. Prioritize your health. Make sure that you're healthy and happy most of the time. You do not walk around feeling stressed, feeling depressed, feeling anxious unnecessarily. You're more grounded. You're eating clean foods. You're drinking enough water, you're exercising, you're going to bed at a proper time. And more importantly, you're trying to look at life in a witnessing manner, in a way you're observing. And you're having a spiritual outlook towards everything that is happening. And once you cultivate that, you won't have a roller coaster ride of feeling good or bad, having yum or yuck, or feeling happy or unhappy, but you are much more stable in your intellect. And the decisions that you will make from that stable intellect are always going to be evolutionary and life nourishing. That's ultimately going to make you, I would say, healthy and happy for no good reason.
I love that. And thank you so much for sharing that and all of your wisdom. So where can we find your book, connect with you, do a Panchakarma with you, and learn from you further?
Well, I think that's a very nice question. My new book, which is published by HarperCollins, and Dr. Chopra wrote a wonderful foreword for this book, Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life, is already on Amazon and people can buy it before it is being published in January 2018. So you can send your order for a pre-publication book, which will be sent off to you as soon as the book is released in January 2018. That's a good way to start your year to make your changes.
So yes.
Go to Barnes & Noble, go to IndieBound, go to Amazon and pick up a copy of Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life. Wonderful information about clogged genes, about losing weight, about optimizing your workout, about getting a good night's sleep, and how the rituals and the routines of Ayurveda, the daily routine, the circadian rhythms are perfectly in sync with everything that you want to achieve in life. You can find me and my work on my website at drsuhas.com. or ayurvedichealing.net. Ayurvedichealing.net has all my products and services and the courses and the classes that I teach. And you can also find my Panchakarma clinic. We have a beautiful Panchakarma clinic in Santa Cruz, California, which is just south of San Francisco, about an hour south near San Jose. And it's a beautiful clinic. And that's where I'm talking to all of you from today. And please come and enjoy Panchakarma. Panchakarma is a whole body detox and rejuvenation. It's a very nourishing experience. You are able to get rid of many physical, psycho-emotional, and subtle impurities through the nearest possible exit and rekindle your agni, get rid of ama, and feel really, really light and energetic. So lots of people from all walks of life from around the country actually come here to receive their healing at Ayurvedic Healing. So check us out at ayurvedichealing.net and definitely make sure you pick up your copy for Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. And I'll post all those links in the show notes and your center is in the back of the book in the resources section as well.
Thank you. So thank you for mentioning that.
Well, thank you so much again for making the time. Truly, this message is so needed for so many millennials that we're really, we don't have that guidance. A lot of our parents never taught us these things. So thank you so much for being that voice. And hopefully we will be the generation who will continue to outlive the next if we create these changes in our lives now.
Thank you, Sahara, to be a role model for the message that you embody and you carry and you share this wisdom.
Thank you so much. And I will definitely come do a Pancha Karma with you soon.
So what did you guys think of the interview? Are you motivated now to change your schedule and change your life? Well, I hope so. And we're going to be doing a giveaway of his book on my Instagram. So head over there at I Am Sahara Rose. We're going to do a giveaway. Hopefully you guys are going to get this wisdom. If not, you can still buy it in the stores. And for a special gift for all of you guys who rate and review this podcast in the iTunes store, I'm offering the first half of my unreleased book free. All you got to do is send a screenshot of your review to my email, Sahara, S-A-H-A-R-A, at eat, E-A-T, feel, F-E-E-L, fresh, FRESH.com. Send me a review of your screenshot and I'll send you back the first half of my unreleased book, Eat Right for Your Mind Body Type, Infusing Ayurveda with Modern Nutritional Science. I'm so grateful to have you guys here joining me in this Ayurvedic journey. It truly is a journey that never ends. And so honored and privileged to have Dr. Suhas here. Namaste.